We'll turn our time over to Larry. I would like to read from John 8, verses 3 to 11. If you want to follow with me, you're welcome to do so. And this passage deals with grace. And I think you pretty well got the message this morning. Our message is going to be about grace. And I think all of us need that at different times. So, John 8, verses 3 to 11. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and he said to them, "If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Again he stooped down and he wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up, and he asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin."
So the Pharisees and the teachers of the law brought this woman who had been caught in adultery to Jesus. And they tested him by asking if they should stone her or not. Now, it was a source of great pride to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law that they were outstanding scorekeepers. They knew the rule book inside and out, and they were particularly expert at detecting errors and calling fouls. They kept extremely accurate statistics. I think they used an app called Gotcha. Now, these hair-splitting statisticians knew that there was a complication in the scorekeeping on adultery, which they hoped would trip Jesus up. You see, if he said stoner, well, then he'd be contradicting Jewish or Roman law, which did not allow the Jews to exercise capital punishment. But if he said, well, you can't stone her, don't stone her, well, then he was contradicting Jewish law, which required a woman such as this to be stoned. Now, they all lived with this tension. But they thought that if they hit him with the question point blank, that they could force him to declare himself and put himself in a bind. But Jesus turned the tables on them, and he caught them in a bind as he simply and quietly said, "Well, okay. If any one of you is without sin, well, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Well, they immediately knew that Jesus had just zinged them. And one by one, they slunk off to lick their wounds. And pretty soon, it was only Jesus and the woman standing there. "Well," said Jesus, "guess they didn't have the stomach to do what they were talking about so bravely, did they? Blasted scorekeepers. I wish they had just chewed up sides and stone each other. But now, I've got a bone to pick with you. You know that committing adultery is breaking the seventh commandment. You should have known better than that. What were you thinking? You need to throw yourself down on the ground and beg for forgiveness. No, hold it, hold it, hold it. Cancel, cancel. That isn't what Jesus said, is it? That isn't what happened here in this episode. What I've just said is what would have happened if any of us had been in the place of Jesus. Because, you see, the sad truth is that most of us tend to be scorekeepers too. Most of us tend to err on the side of the Pharisees and the Sadducees than on the side of Jesus. We tend to be scorekeepers, just like those Pharisees are scorekeepers. Jesus, on the other hand, was a grace giver. Instead of processing this woman's sin, instead of making sure that she jumped through a bunch of hoops, Jesus just simply said, "Then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin." And the woman was free to go. Just like that. Even though she had committed adultery, Jesus just simply dismisses her by saying, "Neither do I condemn you for what you've done. Just don't do it anymore." Now, what makes the difference between the way we scorekeepers would have treated this woman and the way Jesus treated this woman? Well, the answer, of course, is grace. This woman had accidentally stumbled on something entirely unexpected. The grace of Jesus, which is better yet than the grace of IRS. Yeah, she didn't encounter it. She expected this was it for her. But this grace-giving Jesus cut through all of the bureaucratic red tape of law and repentance and scorekeeping. And he simply pronounced forgiveness, full and free. You know, you don't have to read too far into the Gospels before you discover that Jesus was a grace giver. And that he offered a surprising degree of grace and forgiveness. In fact, Jesus operated with a degree of grace and forgiveness that frequently offends our scorekeeping sense of justice and fair play. See, our sense of justice and fair play would have demanded that we at least need to process this woman's sin, and we've got to make sure that she confesses her sin. And we got to make sure that she makes a pledge of renewed life and promises never to do it again. I mean, isn't that right? Isn't that justifiable? Isn't that the way we would do it? Isn't that the way we think it should be done to make sure that this woman is on the straight and the narrow? But Jesus just lets her off the hook. Jesus was not a scorekeeper. Jesus was a grace giver. And when Jesus gave grace, he gave it freely, like with a fire hose. We had a fire in Kidron just a couple weeks ago, and I got to stand there and watch him with that fire hose. That throws an awful lot of water. And that's how Jesus dispenses grace. Now, because of his tendency to dispense grace like that, Jesus is a real frustration to us scorekeepers. I mean, his grace extends a lot further than we think it should. To the extent that we extend grace, we tend to keep it within carefully defined boundaries. If we're going to dispense any grace, well, we carefully calculate how much we're willing to administer. And then we administer it carefully with an eyedropper. You know, just drawing up the right amount, squeezing a little bit back into the bottle and getting it right there in that line and by the milliliter and then here. And we've dispensed our grace. Well, grace-giving Jesus uses fire hoses and buckets and sloshes grace all around indiscriminately. Seems to pay little attention to justice and scorekeeping. He loves to dispense grace in large amounts, fully and freely. You know what? Some of it sloshed on me. And some of it sloshed on you. And we've been singing about it all morning. Now there's a real divide between Jesus and us on this issue. We seldom join Him in the fire hose dispensing of grace because of these concerns we have about justice and fair play. We like to see people pay their debts. We like to make sure that they have jumped through the right hoops of confession and repentance. And we especially like to see people pay their debts when they owe them to us. Isn't that right? If they've offended against us, then's when we really want to see them jump through the right hoops. That's exactly what we see in the well-known story of the unmerciful servant in Matthew 18, in which the unmerciful servant, who had been forgiven a huge debt, refuses to forgive a small debt owed to him by one of his fellow servants. Now, there are two different lenses through which the unmerciful servant could view the second servant. First of all, there was the lens of grace, which had been freely showered on him just a little bit ago. Then there was this lens of justice and fairness and paying your debts, especially if you owe your debt to me. Now, the lens of justice and fairness has this scorekeeping tint to it. And this scorekeeping tint magnifies the fact that this guy owes him money. He needs to pay it back. I mean, the law of fairness and justice. This guy has to pay his debt back, doesn't he? But the tint of the lens of grace, on the other hand, calls forth an attitude of acceptance and forgiveness. And it forgets about the scorekeeping. It just simply says, well, since I've had this wonderful gift given to me, well, then I'm going to share it a little bit. I'm going to spread some of the wonderful benefit with somebody else. Now, to sustain the forgiving nature of the lens of grace, it would have helped immensely if the servant would have remembered that he had just received this huge sum of forgiveness of his own. That this huge sum of forgiveness had been deposited in his account. And with that huge deposit, well, he had all kinds of resources for forgiving all the debts that anyone owed him. That he didn't need to keep score anymore. He could just throw away his account book, because way more than enough to cover all the debts in that book had been deposited in his account. But that's not the way the unmerciful servant did it. And because the unmerciful servant chose to ignore all that had been granted to him and to look at his fellow servant through the lens of justice and fairness rather than through the lens of grace, the king changes his mind and he forgets about the lens of grace and he adopts the lens of justice and fairness and paying one's debts. And he sends this scorekeeping servant to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. Now, contrary to other parables, where oftentimes the lead character represents God or Jesus, this is one time where the point is found in the contrast. The point here is that unlike the king in the parable, Jesus never chooses to accept the scorekeeping lens. Jesus always uses the lens of grace for every situation. The point is that Jesus is an irrepressible grace giver. And the point is that we are to be grace givers too. See, that king had given all this grace to this first servant. And the lesson is just so obvious that, well, he was to be a grace giver too. We too, having received this wonderful grace of Jesus, are to be grace givers just like the guy in the parable was supposed to be a grace giver. So then it's settled. We're all grace givers, aren't we? Or, well, let's put it this way. We're supposed to be grace givers. Just like Jesus, we're supposed to slosh grace around every day. We're supposed to. That's the way it's supposed to be. But I'm afraid that as I look around at the run-of-the-mill Christians that we all turn out to be, that we're not very good grace givers at all. That we're not doing all that good a job at given grace. And I think it's because we fail to comprehend the wonder of the forgiveness and grace that Jesus has sloshed over on us. It's because we ignore the huge deposit he has made in our grace account. It's because we refuse to take off our lenses of fair play and justice. It's because we refuse to lay down our scorekeeping pencils. Resolutely we cling to our scorebooks and we flatly refuse to walk away from our scorekeeper's table. Despite the clear teaching of Jesus, we tend to not be very good grace givers. Or at least I'm going to say, I don't know about you, but I can report on myself. And I know that there's a deficit there. I think I'm doing better than I used to. Hopefully I'm maturing in my Christian walk, but still there are an awful lot of times when I cling to that scorekeeping
pencil. I hang onto that book and I keep score. So, if you're there with me, what will it take for us to become grace givers? Well, first of all, as I've already been saying, we need to develop a full-bodied awareness of how we have received God's grace and forgiveness. That's the point of the parable of the unmerciful servant. And that's the point of the passage that we read from Ephesians 2 this morning, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That because of His great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you have been saved. We need to somehow get our minds around the fact that God has not demanded justice in our case, but He has extended grace to us. Just understanding that great truth should make us willing and eager to shower grace upon others. And when we understand what we have received, that we should be so grateful to give it on to others. But just like the unmerciful servant, we so seldom are. We still are so committed to fair play and scorekeeping. We still consider giving grace to being an eyedropper affair, and only for those who have jumped through the right hoops. And I think one of the reasons for this is that we so frequently get stuck thinking about the really hard issues. Whenever we are told, as in this sermon, that we are to be grace givers, we immediately think of those people who've committed really, really major offenses against us. People who have really hurt us. And since we know that giving grace in that instance is so far beyond us, we conclude that, well, I can't be a grace giver because there's no way that I can ever forgive that huge offense that happened 25 years ago, or maybe just 6 weeks ago. But that's just too huge. I can't overcome that. I can't give grace to the person who did that to me. But you know, to say I can't be a grace giver because I can't forgive the huge offenses is the same thing as saying, I can't be a runner because I can't run a marathon. The truth of the matter is that there are millions of runners who can't run a marathon. But they don't let their inability to run a 26.2-mile race stand in the way of their running a vast variety of lesser distances. There are many, many, many people who run 5K. Many people who run 3 miles, 2 miles, 1 miles, once around the block, or even just a 0.2 loop in the park. They're runners. You don't have to be able to run a marathon to be a runner. And you don't have to be able to extend grace for huge offenses in order to be a grace giver. We need to spend more time thinking about being grace givers in the once around the block or the 1 mile grace giving opportunities of life. Yes, there are those huge things where we've been badly hurt, where we're not sure we're ever going to get there to be able to give grace. But we can give grace in those much smaller areas of life. By smaller, shorter, grace-giving opportunities, I'm referring to things like this. You asked him to get milk on the way home. You asked him in the morning before he left for work. You emailed him in the middle of the afternoon And he came home and he forgot the milk. That's one of those, you know, 1 mile or 0.2 loop at the parks kind of an offense. It does not equate with this huge destroyed my life thing of 25 years ago. It's just a little itty bitty thing. How about let's begin with giving grace for something like that? Maybe she failed to make the transfer from the savings account into the checking account, with the result that there wasn't enough in checking to cover the mortgage withdrawal and the Visa withdrawal. Now, I mean, there's some complications to that. But still, it's not like that huge destroyed my life 25 years ago kind of a thing. It's maybe like a 2 mile kind of an offense. Give grace. Give grace for those kind of offenses. I think we all know what I'm talking about here. The day-to-day failures of the people we live with. Our husband, our wife, our son, our daughter, the person we work with, that person we have to put up with here at church. You see, it's here where the rubber of grace most often meets the road. Not with those huge marathon grace-giving situations. You know, there really aren't that many of those. But with the little loop in the park or 1 mile grace-giving opportunities, of which there are plenty as we go through life. If we can learn to be grace-givers in those areas, it will make such a huge difference in our lives. If we didn't have to growl and grump and complain and create a frustration between us and the relationship over every time there's a little offense like that. If we can give grace in those areas, our marriages, our lives, our families, our homes would be so much happier. If we become grace givers, we will become agents of God, dispensers of His grace. Now, I know we're much more willing to be agents of God's judgment and wrath than agents of His grace. We still have a tendency towards scorekeeping. We still are more willing to remind God of what someone has done that isn't in keeping with His rules, especially those things that impinge on us. God would far, far rather have us be agents of His grace, His forgiveness, and His love. And the beginning point should be the simple issues of life. We can practice there on the people who screw up around us, around the house, at work, or school. Let's let the people we live with marvel this week at the transformation that's come over us. Let's see this week how good we can become at being grace givers.